to be a baller. Welcome to Be a Baller, where we discuss how to build a lifelong legacy. I'm your host, Coach Tim Brown. Today we'll be talking about building a legacy in ministry with my special guest, Harvey Hook, one of the founders of Youth for Christ in Columbus.
Before we get started, let's hear a word from our sponsor. Are you fed up with paying high shipping costs? Are you struggling to find a trucking company that can get your freight where it needs to go, safely and on time? If so, contact my friends at T&E Logistics. The team at T&E has over 20 years experience in the logistics industry and are experts at final mile delivery and freight brokering. If they can't fulfill your shipment with their fleet of over 20 trucks, they will find a carrier that will. Contact T&E today, get a free quote, and put your frustrations with shipping behind you. Their number is 614-706-2664 or visit them online at tndlogistics.com.
Today on the show, Harvey will share his heart for ministry to youth and adults. Harvey is also a great supporter of ministry work in the Dominican Republic. Harvey, welcome to Be a Baller podcast.
Tim, it's a great joy to be with you. You've had a wonderful lineup of guests for every podcast, so thank you so much.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about how you have growing up, how'd you develop such a heart for service?
I believe it's my wiring. I believe that is how God created me. Just a heart to serve Him. I pursued a career, but it always came with the caveat of the requirement that I needed to know who I was, my identity, and I needed to know my calling in life or my purpose. Once I knew who I was, my identity, my rudder, and then my purpose in life, my sail, and then at the age of 14 or 15 years old, somehow I had a sense that there was a call on my life by God to serve Him. The interesting thing at that age, the only two things that I was aware of were to be a pastor or an overseas missionary, but somehow neither one of them was something that I ever thought was my fit. So I just stayed faithful to the Lord moving forward, and that led me into a life of active service.
Sounds like, did you grow up in a Christian home?
I grew up in a Christian home. My parents were not believers when they were married. They came to Christ through a local pastor in their community in North Central Maine. So the youngest of three boys, and so I grew up in a Christian home, and it was Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, rinse, repeat.
That's it. You know, you were born in Lincoln, Maine, three boys. Your dad was a lumberjack and mom a seamstress. Can you talk about the work ethic you and your brothers learned from them?
Well, my family history actually through my mom and dad actually goes all the way back to 1620 in the Mayflower. And somehow when my ancestors arrived in Plymouth, Mass., they chose to go north into the cold instead of south into the warmth. So that is where my roots are. And so my dad became a lumberjack following sixth grade. His father passed away. They needed somebody in the home to replace my dad's dad's income. So my father, after sixth grade, moved into the fields to become a lumberjack. My mom had an eighth grade education. Poor health prevented her from going to high school. But I grew up the youngest of three boys. And my dad, over the course of his life, he could only work as a lumberjack until his mid-40s. And then we moved from state of Maine down to New York State. And this is what I remember most about my father. My father worked at a state institution for the severely, profoundly, mentally and physically handicapped. He worked a night shift, 11:30 at night to 7:30 in the morning. When school was in session, he picked up his school bus. He drove school bus. He came home, ate breakfast, went to bed, got up, drove school bus, came home, have dinner with the family. And then he would repeat that cycle. We lived in an apartment home, and my dad determined that every Friday he would go to the bank and make a deposit. He figured if he would spend on alcohol and cigarettes what his friends were spending, he soon would have enough money to buy the apartment building. So working nights, driving school bus, being able to buy the apartment building allowed our family to move forward just a little by little because of the dedicated, hardworking ethic of my mom and dad. And my mom was right there dealing with the ups and downs of three active boys. And for all the moms out there who have had boys, I deeply apologize. We never truly loved you and gave of enough of ourselves to you while we were under the roof.
And how God would have it, your early ministry work was a chaplain at the Denver Juvenile Hall. How did that experience prepare you for your work you do today?
Oh, I believe that, well, first of all, I know and understand my purpose in life. And I'll come back to that question. So my purpose in life, I've stated it different ways over time. When I worked with our incarcerated kids in Denver, Colorado, or moved into inner city Columbus in the Linden area and worked with at-risk kids there, my understanding that God wanted to use me as his tool to show his love to the world. So it was very broad. And so my job was to serve others. During the years when I led the ministry of the gathering and we were working with business, professional, government leaders, I stated it more like my purpose was to transform culture through transformed leaders. If we could influence men and women of Christ in the marketplace to become high impact, loving, caring, compassionate individuals in the workplace, in the marketplace, we could transform the entire culture of Columbus and Central Ohio. And now in my work with Vista Village, as we are developing a tiny home community to serve men and women experiencing homelessness, I state it far more like I create opportunities for people and communities to thrive. I see all three of those as interchangeable. Being somebody who yields his will to God so that God can open the right doors in the right way to lead you where he's leading you. So I did with incarcerated kids in the 70s and 80s, what I did with business leaders and what I'm doing with men and women experiencing homelessness. It's a different assignment, but it's the same me.
Great. When you say the same me, what does that mean?
Well, I'll try not to run us into a rabbit hole because I do that sometimes. I'm an introvert, and I make the simple complex. So that's what I do. The same me. Let me share. It's very, very important that we know who we are. I mentioned earlier. Let me run this thing together here. People know who they are, your identity. And my foundation for my identity is in God the Father. People know who they are, why they're here, that's your purpose. How you're wired, your personality, your strengths, your weaknesses, your character pluses and minuses. How you live your life, your character. Those people are best prepared to love, serve, and lead themselves and others in healthy, high-impact ways. And I call that transformation. So I know I'm an introvert. I know on the Enneagram profile, I'm a peacemaker. Mm. I'm a number nine. Mm. And that's one of the nine profiles of the Enneagram. It sits at the top of the circle. And with that comes the inherent capacity to understand the perspective of the other eight personalities around that. Mm. I've come to understand I'm very comfortable with the ambiguous. I'm very comfortable in settings where business, faith, government, black, white, brown, conservative, liberal are all there together. And so that has been one of the hallmarks or fingerprints of my life in these different service capacity is to bring together that which is thought to be different from one another and to seek ways for that which is different to become one in Christ.
Mm. That's good. That's really good. You know, the word founder continues to follow your name. You know, you were one of the founders of Youth for Christ here in Columbus, sometimes Youth for Christ. You were a co-founder of Convene Columbus, the Gathering and Relay Leadership. What is it about you that encourages you to be a leader in these ministry opportunities?
Number one, it's God's opportunity. Mm-hmm. Number two, it's understanding my wiring. Mm. I've also come to realize that even if I didn't have that depth of understanding about who I am, I would still have done all of those things throughout the course of my lifetime. Mm-hmm. They give me joy. They give me pleasure. I'm impatient. If I see, like when I was in seminary, we had to sign up for volunteer service as one of the requirements. And I saw many, many college students sign up to teach adult Sunday school classes, et cetera, et cetera. And I looked to where I could find the shortest line of people signing up. And I looked for it, and God gave it to me, an invitation from a friend to begin to befriend a young African-American teenager who was incarcerated in the correctional system. Mm-hmm. So that's where it began. One of three founders of what's today Central Ohio mm-hmm. Youth for Christ. Mm-hmm. That was an invitation by a gentleman named Art Dio to leave beautiful 300 days of sunshine a year, Denver, Colorado, skiing, Red Rocks, natural amphitheater to come to gray, full of allergy, flat Columbus, Ohio. But I became because I was excited about the opportunity yes. to be part of a team that was going to create something mm. that didn't exist prior to our arrival. Mm. I transitioned from that to the Gathering because it was another invitation. And I, ever since I was in Denver, even when I was in Denver and I was working with broken kids and families and pulling volunteers together, I always had a heart for the marketplace, mm. business, professional, and government leaders. That door was opened. And after thought and prayer and counsel, I then walked through it mm. to go and develop the Columbus chapter of the Gathering. I guess if I were to sit here and close my eyes, I've always had a room in my house where there's the old school red rotary dial phone on the wall. Everywhere I live, there's one of those with that 28-foot cord. And I believe that I'm one of those individuals who is on call. Mm. And God, if there's something else to start, I would be glad to do it. And you were talking to John Pace in a prior podcast about legacy. And I guess for me, the legacy would be this. And it's not attributed to my strength or my character or my unique abilities. By God's grace, I've been able to be part of starting things that continue to this day. Mm-hmm. From 1977 in Denver, Colorado, that chaplaincy ministry continues. Mm-hmm. Youth for Christ in Columbus and Central Ohio from 81 to today, that continues mm-hmm. under great local leadership. Mm-hmm. The work I began with the gathering, that continued for 26 mm-hmm. years. And now a lot of the work that we did there is now being replicated by other organizations.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Bible says this, he who began a good work in you will see it through to completion. And I think you started the work and it's still, and the beauty of the work that you started is not complete yet. It's still growing. I mean, Youth for Christ is really still growing.
Yes.
I mean, that whole
yes.
side of town, that whole west side, mm-hmm. still serving, still growing. And that's truly been a blessing.
Hey there, Clark Kellogg here. Building a legacy usually involves meeting the unique needs of others and being part of something bigger than yourself. That's why I love First Merchants Bank. First Merchants believes that helping communities prosper means more than just providing banking services. It means offering accessible financial education, expanded access to homeownership, and partnerships with local nonprofits to help raise up neighborhoods and lift families out of financial hardship. For resources and tools available to you, visit www.firstmerchants.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
You have been a true gatherer of people. And you mentioned this before, how you brought the Central Ohio, the faith community together, business community together, nonprofits, and you've been blessed across all racial lines, you know. How have you been so successful in doing this?
I've talked a lot about call today.
Mm-hmm.
And number one, I was called to it. Number two, I was willing to go.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, God utilized my talents and abilities. I believe the culture was ready for
mm-hmm.
it. And when I entered, I was the catalyst. I was mm-hmm. the activating agent
mm-hmm.
that brought those pieces together to produce movements and organizations. There have been people over the years, Harvey, who would say, Harvey, you know, mayors, governors, millionaires, billionaires, and, you know, yes, that's true. But I've served my way into those relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever titles or dollar amounts I just threw, they were never the goal. They were a result of obedience.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I'll stop at that.
All right. Good. Let's talk about your book, The mm-hmm. Power of Ordinary Life. What was the vision behind the book?
The vision behind The Power of an Ordinary Life, and it's a hardcover published by Tyndale House Publishers in the greater Chicago area.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the story. I was turning 50,
mm-hmm.
and I felt I needed to do one more thing in life to leave my fingerprints somewhere.
Right.
So I was going to run a marathon until my left knee and my doctor said, no, you're not going to run a marathon.
That's not happening.
So I'm a journaler. I go through extensive periods of journaling every day, and I go through periods of not journaling at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting one morning looking at a number of things I had journaled, and I don't know where the thought came from. I'll attribute it to the Lord. And I thought, this could be an outline for a book.
Mm.
Wow, where'd that come from? And so I began to organize my 1,000 book library into stacks that could answer the question, what is my destiny, my call, my purpose, my vision my gifts and abilities, my core values, my priorities. How do you leave a legacy? I wanted to see what others said about those things. Then I began to reflect and began to write. This is the genesis of it. I wanted to write a book for the everyday, average, ordinary person who wondered if their life made a difference, because that was me. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to go into the depths of my life, into the depths of others, known and unknown, famous, anonymous, who've had a major impact on the world, and put all of those together into a book. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to write a book to encourage the average person to say, if you can answer these questions and follow the model of these lives, I guarantee with Christ at the center, you will be able to leave a lasting legacy. In 1974, Dr. Francis Schaeffer wrote a book entitled No Little People. Mm. I'll take that as a title for my book, so to speak, in which Dr. Francis Schaeffer, one of the great philosophical and theological minds of the last century, said, in short, in God's sight, there are no little people and no little places, only individuals who live their lives in consecrated moments of obedience to God. And when they do so, he gives them the ability to influence the flow of a generation. Mm. And when I read that in his book, I had the essence for what was going to be the power of an ordinary life. Power in ordinary life, discover the extraordinary possibilities within. Not just a self-help book, but deeply founded in scripture with stories that include former head football coach Jim Tressel, former Indianapolis head football coach Tony Dungy, to foreign missionaries, to totally unknown individuals whose lives have made a difference. That was one way I wanted to contribute to encouraging and helping to guide others that their life does matter.
Mm. You know, Harvey, I know that you have a deep love for serving the people in the Dominican Republic. When and where did that develop in you?
My first trip was to the Dominican Republic, Santo Domingo, in 2006. It was April. Mm-hmm. That was a brand new ministry started in the Dominican as a collaboration of Haitians, Dominicans, and Americans. And the ministry I was involved in at that point in time, the gathering was the parent organization. Okay. So it was kind of concluded for you, you would go down there and serve. Mm-hmm. And I went down there. I didn't think it through. Mm-hmm. I just went and showed up. And when I did, when I was no longer in charge of anything, the whole week was before me. I wasn't calling any of the shots. As I began to move through that week, and for me, it began by encountering children, little 6-year-old Viviana, little 8-year-old Karina, little 7-year-old Luisa. And they welcomed me into their lives. And they brought me into their homes. And God just so graciously spoke to me through the simplicity of their human interactions. So right about that time in 06, I was wrapping up my book, and I don't know, I had another 12 pages I could use. The publisher would let me, and I wrote the epilogue. Mm. And if I can remember, I wrote there only three things different between me and the children in Dominican Republic. We have so much and are so often so very unhappy. Mm. They have so little and are so very happy. We have untold opportunities, and they have very, very, very few opportunities. And the third thing is we're here and they're there. That's it. Mm. If they were here in your shoes or my shoes, they would be the ones living the lives that we live. We are no better than anyone else on the planet. As a result of that, I worked with some other volunteers from Columbus. We built a couple of homes for a couple of families we had close relationships with. And now, whenever I go back to the Dominican Republic, I'm the butt of many, many jokes by many people who have been there, because the joke is this: Harvey Hook will come down on Monday morning. He will go with everybody else, and he will serve on a block line to build a home, and then he will disappear into the village, not to reappear until the return flight to Columbus, Ohio. Now, not quite as extreme as that. This is what I thought. If there are 50 adults working a block line in one place and some of them are serving another need somewhere else, I thought, they can get by with 49, can't they? Oh, yeah. And then that allowed me to get to know men, women, and children, eat meals with them, and many times bring needs forward to little boys who needed hernia surgery. It would have been bypassed. Their mom would have been too embarrassed or ashamed because she didn't have the resources for these surgeries. I was able to bring that forward, work with others to generate the funds to meet those needs. And so close my eyes. I'm walking the streets of Cielo and Nazareth, and I'm holding a small, sweaty child's hand, and I never want to let go.
Mm. Wow, it's a great story. That's a great story. You know, lastly, as we wrap up, can you talk about your work as a chief engagement officer for Vista Village? You know, there's some great things happening with that project. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, the red phone on the wall rang a little over 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Good buddy of mine, Juan Jose Perez, John Perez, founding attorney at President Morris Law Firm, had a vision to serve men and women experiencing homelessness. And so he approached me because of my work inner city Denver and Columbus, people in need, marginalized populations. He also approached me because all the years of the gathering, I've gotten to know nonprofit leaders, government leaders, business leaders, corporations, foundations. So with a background, plus the work in the Dominican, a history of working with people in need, and then a connection to the world of resources. I've always believed that I have a single call, but my single call in life has always been to bring those with resources to meet the needs of those without resources. You need to be in touch with the poor and the marginalized, and you also need to have access to people with great resources. And we are fully engaging with multiple churches around the city. We will break ground in mid-summer 2023. The goal is to put up 420 square foot tiny homes, one person per home, bedroom, bathroom, kitchen, living area, front porch. They will be steps away from a 4,000 square foot community center where we will bring in a comprehensive suite of services: healthcare, mental health counseling, financial literacy, leadership development, workforce development, skilled trades training. And our property is located in Southeast Columbus on Refugee Road, just west of Hamilton. think Eastland Mall. Mm-hmm. We're west of there. Think Bishop Timothy Clark, First Church of God. We're just east of his location. It's transitional housing for men and women experiencing homelessness. Take them on the journey. They receive care while they're there in a period of 18 to 24 months. They will receive the care they need. They will become employed. They will have a savings account, and we will journey with them to their independent living in the broader community. Mm. And then we will bring another individual in to take their place. And so it's a $6 million capital campaign. We've got commitments of 4.2, got another couple million to go. I'm not asking for money today. No, it's about the mission. Mm-hmm. And it's about leveraging church relationships and individual relationships in a safe, secure environment that just come in and love the socks off these men and women. Five categories: those living in camps and on the streets, those eight young adults, teenagers, aging out of foster care, returning citizens from incarceration, some phenomenal ministries already working with them. We're going to give them a place to live. Mm. Veterans, huge need. Mm. 30 veterans a day commit suicide. Mm. And we need to get in their pathway of life. And then others involved in substance recovery programs.
Wow. Well, Harvey, I want to thank you for answering the call. I want to thank you for that red foam that's on the wall.
Yes, it is.
I'm so glad that you continue to pick it up.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited about the great things that you've done and how you are building that legacy in ministry. So this brings us to the end of this episode. We thanks to our special guest, Harvey Hook, for sharing his heart to serve people. Harvey, I want to thank you for being a shining light in a dark world. And thank you for your commitment in ministry. Hope this episode was beneficial to you. As always, thanks for listening to Be a Baller Podcast.
If you enjoy our show, please share this podcast with your family and friends. Be a Baller Podcast is available on all major podcast stations. Be sure to come back next week as we continue to discuss on how to build a lifelong legacy. Until then, don't forget to be a baller. This podcast was created by Coach Tim Brown. It was edited by Teron Howell and produced and recorded by the video production class of Worthington Christian High School.